Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, a record that is hot enough to melt vinyl, or at least make it more bendy. Today, we will be taking a trip to Trinidad and Tobago by way of Hamburg, Germany, by talking about The Serpent's Mouth, the sophomore album from last year by the Bacow Rhythm and Steel Band. Bjorn Wagner grew up in Germany, but after living in Trinidad and Tobago for a few years, he got a taste of the island nation's most famous musical export, the steel pan drum. With its tinny, bell-like sound, nothing else quite sounds like a steel drum, but pop culture has treated its musicians as both a cultural and musical cliché. Think of TV shows or movies where a steel drum band with loud shirts and straw hats greets tourists streaming off a cruise ship. That is decidedly not what Wagner's Bacow Rhythm and Steel Band is about. Taking a page from the soul and funk steel pan bands of the 1970s, Bacow follows in their tradition by mixing its own original songs with a selection of covers, taking on the hits of everyone from Amory to the Jackson 5 to, yes, the Diggy Dr. Dre. The Serpent's Mouth was the album pick of our guest today, DJ Garth Trinidad.
LA radio has always been great. Great stations, yes. KGFJ, KGLH, KACE, KJAZZ, KPCC, and KCRW. But behind the music, what's pushed my city to airwave royalty are those running the point. Great DJs I remember, like Hamilton Cloud, Helen Borgers, Brooke Jones, Easy Wiggins, and our guest. Garth Trinidad has been great for 23 years. To appreciate that kind of tenure, consider the changes in music since 1996. Consider the artists and albums celebrating milestones. Baduism, 22 years old. Firstborn Second, 19 years old. Miseducation, 21. Voodoo, 19. Urban Hang Suite, 22. And Garth was there, on the air, breaking artists like Jill Scott and escorting us to the dance and the dawn of a new genre. He was there, educating us, introducing us to labels like Naked Music, Free Range, True Thoughts, Astralworks, Bittersweet, and Sonar Collective. He was there for diasporic music, dance music, at the beginning of the beat scene. His show was a music festival before those were in vogue, before the digitization of your listening habits, when it was just rhythm, not algorithm. And auxiliary chord gangsters. While he was being great, he broke some of the greats. A list of names that would take forever to list. While being great, he opened the door for so many, including me, a music geek whose sonic nature needed nurture. Someone just blessed enough to spend a couple of years assisting a master teacher with the ill voice, the bionic ear, an archivist, an evangelist, a DJ. I was raised in Los Angeles. I was baptized in Waco, Texas, but I was schooled in Chocolate City. This man's Chocolate City, a trailblazer whose work on Saturdays shaped sonic culture and our city one song at a time. He calls himself Uncle Garth. I call him a pediatrician because he's the one who gave me my first shot. Besides the Lord, two others are responsible for me being able to call myself a music supervisor. One is our guest. Welcome to Heat Rocks, Garth Trinidad.
So, Morgan, remind me how much I owe you. I know we discussed this. No, seriously, I'm honored to be among you both when you asked me to be on the show, because I've been hearing great things about the show, and it's developing its reputation, and it's fantastic. So the two of you here makes me feel really good, because it's not often that we get to really discuss music on deeper levels. So when you asked, I was like, of course, it's a given. So thank you for allowing me to hang out with you guys today.
Thank you for coming.
I'm not saying this to besmirch any of our past wonderful guests, but is this not the best vocally sounding show that we've taped so far.
The best. The best. DJ Dulcet Tones in the building.
So Garth, I'm really, really psyched that you picked this album in particular, partly because after we reviewed it last fall for NPR when it first came out, but more to the point, one of the micro niches of music that I collect are steel pan drum albums from the early 70s, most of them covering soul and funk songs. I think the first one I might have been turned on to was by the Trinidad steel drum band covering Sissy Strut circa 1973.
Yes.
I'm not going to share how much I've spent on these particular kind of records over the many years, but let's just say that I am a fan, and therefore, when Bacow first hit my radar a couple years back, I was definitely taking notice. But Garth, why did you want to talk about this album in particular?
Well, number one, I've collected a few of those myself. I have that record.
Yeah.
A couple from that band.
Yeah.
I love the covers, and I particularly love the sound of the steel drum. And rewind back to childhood, I was first introduced to the sound, and it got me when I was watching Tom and Jerry.
What? They had steel drums?
Well,
God, you're right.
There were a few episodes,
yes,
where they'd be traveling, you know, on a boat or whatever,
yeah,
taking long trips or something. And in order for the show to give off the, you know, the perceived location of where they were in the tropics somewhere, it's like,
right,
well, let's add steel drums. And yeah, I heard the drums, and you would see the cats or whatever cartoon characters were playing the steel drums, and I was like, that sound,
yeah,
just resonated.
Yeah.
And I love the sound of the steel drum, and I've felt, you know, for years, you know, I'd be listening to records like, how come more people don't use steel drums? You know, so when I first heard, you know, Bacow,
yeah,
on the 55 LP, I'm like, oh, I'm all over this.
Yeah.
All over this. So, you know, I was using it at parties and playing it on the air, and it was just like so great to incorporate this long lost sound that I remember being enamored with in childhood into like what I was doing, you know, as a DJ.
Morgan, were steel drums something that were on your sonic radar?
They weren't until maybe 10 or 11. And I had to ask my brother about this memory because it was vague. I was like, do you know anything about Poppy, who's our stepfather, and his relationship to steel bands? And he was like, oh, yeah, you know, he was in a steel band group.
What?
And I was like, wait, what? Fuzzy. You know, when you get to be of a certain age, and I'm not going to say what that number is. But when you get to a certain age, your memories get fuzzy. But as it turns out, my stepfather was a lead singer in Salt and Pepper steel band group. And they had a self-titled debut on Utopia Records in 1972.
Now, the end is near. And so I face the final curtain, my friend. I'll say it clear, I'll state my case.
There were some hits on there, and mostly cover tunes. They,
yeah,
covered Johnny Nash. They covered Oklahoma. And the cover, he's just looking so gangster on there. The cover artist shot in Catalina. I think it was called Salt and Pepper because, you know, it was a mixed race group. And there was fire on that. And I was like, damn, is that why he had steel drums in the crib? And he was like, yeah, well, what'd you think they were for? I was like, I don't know. I don't know why he had them, but that was the situation. And I bought the last copy on Discogs.
His name
is Robert Sharp, Bob Sharp. He was the lead vocalist, and that is my stepfather. So
that's
that
amazing.
Was my relationship to steel bands. Heretofore, I wasn't really into them, and he used to take us to this restaurant called Coley's on Jamaican food, and one of his homeboys would be playing doing him a favor and playing the music in the restaurant.
Oh, sweet.
Each other go. Careful step, mm-hmm, along that byway.
But that's my relationship to it. Hadn't thought about it again until prepping for this.
Wow. So I'm looking at the cover right now. The cover is amazing. You can see Avalon Harbor in the background.
Yep.
And looking at the track listing, they got My Way, so Little Sinatra, right? They have Island in the Sun. They have Oklahoma. Like Rodgers, I'm trying to imagine a Rodgers and Hammerstein still drum flip. I Can See Clearly. That's the Nash you mentioned. I'll Be There by the Jackson 5.
I'll Be
Five.
There. Hits.
And of course, no steel drum album would be complete without a cover of Yellow Bird, which I swear to God is on every single Caribbean steel drum album I've ever found in my life. And I don't know if I've ever heard a version of it I actually particularly liked. But that said, it is absolutely like stone cold standard of
gotta
the genre.
Be. And I'm not sure why that is, but that was them. And of course, my stepfather's the one to the very right. In prep for the chat, I went back and listened to 55. I had
Cal's first album.
Yes. Yeah. And before I could even really get into the whole album, I just got stuck on Love Like This because I'm a Faith Evans devotee. And I was like, man, that's from Keep the Faith. Mm. I couldn't have conceived it as being interpreted a steel drum situation, but it was fire. Mm-hmm. And also one of my favorite all-time hits is that that Janelle and High Tech Round and Round from the How High soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a jam. That is fire. I didn't think I could love it anymore until I heard it on 55. So that was my introduction. Before the whole album, I got into those two songs. Was it Love at First Listen when you heard 55? Love at First Listen?
Yeah, most definitely.
Did you listen cover to cover?
Yes.
Didn't get stuck on any particular jam?
You know, I get stuck on the covers because they're just great reinterpretations. And, you know, like you, echoing what you were just saying about the covers that you got into, is just when you love a song, you know, I think between the three of us, we can all agree that most covers are, you know, not great. You know, so when you hear a great cover of something or a great interpretation, you're like, yo,
right?
Because you already love the song. You already love the composition. You already love the melody. You already love the arrangement. Like, so when someone is able to interpret that a certain way and it comes out great, and this is steel drums, and I'm already like kind of fiending to hear steel drums in modern music, or, you know, someone paying homage to, you know, classic steel drum and rhythms of the Caribbean, it's like, wow. So it wasn't just about like hearing steel drums, but taking this Caribbean tradition of rhythm and steel drum melody and applying it to modern pop culture, to me, was just like magic. Mm. It just got me immediately. So 55 was definitely a favorite for the year when it came out. And then as soon as I saw they had a new record coming, I was all over it. I was like, oh, yeah. And then I saw like the covers they had on here. I'm just like, yo, is it Gangstar? Seriously? Like,
I know.
You know what I mean?
But not any Gangstar, sort of.
Yeah,
not
a B,
all for the
a
cash.
B-side,
yeah,
exactly.
Come on now.
You know what I mean?
Right, right. Do you feel like the group changed much or made a leap between that first album and this new one?
I think it's a little bolder. I love it when artists and bands attempt to evolve without, you know, trying too hard. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's what they're doing. It's
right.
It's more of a natural progression, and they're keeping the attention on the steel drum and the rhythm, you know, which is great. It's fantastic.
So not to take this conversation too heavy, but I am wondering, are these kinds of songs, the ones that are very clearly influenced by American R&B and pop music, are they a reflection of an indigenous music tradition being forced to capitulate to the demands of tourism and capitalism? Or is this a legit genre into itself, kind of an example of how music is just inherently adaptable? And I realize I'm creating a binary here, but I think one could argue both ways on this, that if it wasn't for the tourism trade in the Caribbean, maybe steel pan would never have evolved in this particular direction. But because of the pressures of that, they have to adapt to like who's coming to the island, what they want to hear, and to be able to make records that are palatable back home in the United States. Again, they have to kind of hedge towards that pop sound. And I'm sort of wondering what each of you think of that.
I agree with you on both. You know, it for me, it's both. It can't be one or the other.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely both. But when you go further back, it's just, you know, to keep it light, you know, on the latter, it's like you could just say they enjoy the pop sound and it's like they want to figure out a way to incorporate it into their own scene or culture. Like when you strip away the promotion and the tourism and anything outside the locale, when you go to a town, which still may be fairly disconnected and only really concerned with what's happening in their own scene. And I've you know, been to a couple of places, you know, Old Town Puerto Rico or Old San Juan or whatever, and they'll have festivals and whatever. And you see how the people are not really concerned what's happening outside of their own little world, but they're celebrating what's happening in the world through the music. And that's kind of cool to think about too. But I agree with you as far as the binary of it, because you can't, it's inescapable. Mm. You know, I don't think you can really tear away from the idea of the former, you know?
I think what's refreshing about this album for me is that it's almost like linking one form of black music with the other. Mm. And it gives me hope that instead of this being sort of kitschy and corny, it's like, you're going to get this work. We're going to hit you with hip-hop, and we're going to hit you with R&B, so that it doesn't have a... And we have to go deep because we're from Hamburg.
Seriously.
You know what I'm saying? We can't... Otherwise, we're corny, you know? Yeah. Not to disparage my stepfather, but Oklahoma, you know what I mean? This is legit, and I think it gives me the... I love my stepfather, but it was Oklahoma. This ties the past to the present, and I think what it did for me, and I think for other people that were engaged with this album, was it took an art form or a genre that was big in the 60s and 70s and made it and modernized it so that we can hold on to this form and then dig a little bit deeper into the steel band tradition, which I don't think heretofore we would have done, because it would have gotten lost. I mean, I know you're probably still bumping it and people are playing, you know, steel band albums at the club, but I think this engaged a new generation and took it from being just touristy and just attractive on a very surface level to something a little deeper.
That's unavoidable too. I mean, when you talk about who the new consumers are, and the younger generations, some of these people have probably never heard a steel drum in their lives. Don't even know what it is.
Right.
So, you know, the three of us, we get it. We grew up in a certain era.
We watched
Tom and Jerry. We collect the records from the 70s. But, you know, the people who are 30 and under are like, what is a steel drum?
Right.
You know.
It makes me think, too, and this goes back, Garth, to your point about Tom and Jerry being the introduction, and something that I mentioned earlier as well, is that the singular, unique sound of the steel drum, I think, is also maybe explains why it became passé, is that it turned into a cliché. And because musicians didn't want to use the instrument, despite, like, the uniqueness of its sound, they just didn't want that association with corny Love Boat episodes from the 1970s or cartoons before that.
Because of marketing and promotion, tourism itself... can be looked at by, you know, those of us that take music and culture much more seriously on a deeper level as something that's kitschy and corny and niche and whatever and light and, you know, diet soda. So bubblegum, if you will.
Yeah.
And I agree with you.
Because I think the ukulele, to a lesser extent, suffers a little bit from the same problem. And so when you hear people like Jake, I'm not going to pronounce his last name right, but... You look up Jake and ukulele player, you'll hear what I'm saying, who is a virtuoso with the instrument and will play it in a way that does not make you think of the Brady Bunch going with the Tiki Curse to Hawaii episode. It reminds you that any instrument has a really broad range of application. But I think with the steel drum, because of that deep, deep association with the tourism trade in the Caribbean, it unfortunately is a victim of its own success in that way, in a way that, like, Jamaican music, which has borrowed from American R&B for decades, doesn't have that, because there's just a difference, I think, in context there. Mm-hmm. So, Bacow, Morgan, to bring it back to your point, because the steel drum has just been missing in action from American music for so long, it sort of allowed Bacow to take this thing from the past and return it to the present in a way that's like, it is surprising because it has been MIA for years now.
Fertile ground, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more of our conversation with Garth Trinidad about Bacow, Rhythm and Steel Band after a brief word from a couple of great Max Fun podcasts. Don't go anywhere.
Unless you're able to discuss the semiotics of direwolves in Game of Thrones, Inside Pop is definitely not for you.
Sean, that's a little extreme and also not quite true.
Okay, Amita, how about Inside Pop is the podcast for people who love and appreciate the best pop culture has to offer?
Much better.
In every episode, we interview the people who create the culture you crave.
Past interviews include Luke Cage showrunner Cheo Hadari Coker, the music supervisor of the Florida Project, and Mudbound director Dee Rees.
You'll also get the very best pop culture recommendations in our Big Sell segment.
Plus, the opinions of two TV producers who are pop culture obsessives and actually do care a lot about direwolves.
Which, of course, symbolize our inability to truly connect with the natural world without ultimately destroying it and in the process destroying ourselves.
Listen to Inside Pop every other Wednesday on the Maximum Fun Podcast Network.
There's nothing quite like sailing in the calm international waters on my ship, the SS Biopic.
Avast! It's actually pronounced biopic.
No, you dingus! It's biopic!
Who the hell says that? It's biopic.
It's the words for biography and picture.
All right, that is enough. Ahoy, I'm Dave Holmes. I'm the host of the newly rebooted podcast, formerly known as International Waters, designed to resolve petty but persistent arguments like this. How? By pitting two teams of opinionated comedians against each other with trivia and improv games, of course. Winner takes home the right to be right.
What podcast be this?
It's called Troubled Waters, where we disagree to disagree!
We are back here on Heat Rocks talking to DJ Garth Trinidad about The Serpent's Mouth, the 2018 album from the Bacow Rhythm and Steel Band.
I wanted to ask you to give us a little context, a little history about Big Crown Records. Even for the revivalist soul that's present there, this sound in this album is completely different. Can you talk a little bit about Big Crown Records and some of the other acts that people might not be as familiar with?
Yeah, the roots of Big Crown go back really to the late 90s. And this was the very, very early era of working what you refer to as the revivalist, the soul funk revivalist. People like myself have called it retro soul or retro funk. And that's when the early labels were like Desco. I think Soulfire was another one. And then out of that moment came a community of musicians, which have become far more broad. It includes everyone from our previous Heat Rocks guest, Martin Perna, who founded Antibalas. He's part of that community, the folks who founded Daptone. And then amongst that group was the L. Michaels Affair, which is led by Leanne Michaels. And Leanne Michaels formed a label called Truth and Soul, which a couple years ago flipped its name to Big Crown. And I don't know the reason for that. I think there was a legal issue, which, again, I don't know what the reason why, but it had to change its name. But Big Crown basically used to be Truth and Soul, and it was part of that same New York revivalist soul community that also very prominently includes Daptone and other subsidiary labels. And so Big Crown, you know, Lee Fields has recorded with them for many years now. Bacow's one of their groups. I'm trying to think of who else is on Big Crown. 79.5, which is, I don't even know how to describe them. They're kind of like post-punk, new wave, soul
they
funk.
Are. Yeah.
Very like New York downtown of the early 80s sound, right. 79.5. I was going to say, too, this is going off on a slight tangent, but the fact that Bacow and Wagner's originally from Germany automatically makes me think of one of the very, very early groups that were on the scene recording in the early 1990s, which was the Poets of Rhythm, were also a German band. And you know, one could argue whether or not they were the first retro soul band, but certainly to me, they were the first prominent one. And one of the stories behind them is that when they started recording their early 45s, which were designed to sound like they came from the gut bucket era of funk from the late 60s, early 70s, they would come to the States and just leave them in different record stores. And I think one of our previous guests, Lyrics Born, once told me that he had found one of those singles on a record digging trip to New Orleans and just assumed that they were an American group from that era because he had no idea. And that's kind of what the Poets were trying to do at the time, which was kind of to fool people to think that, you know, this stuff was coming from 20 years ago, except they were actually recording this stuff in the early 1990s.
You do unto me. That's what somebody said. What you do unto me. Every time.
So Bacow is part of a very rich tradition in that sense.
Of German musicians.
Yes.
Of German musicians.
Working with black music in here in the Afro-Caribbean.
Shout out to Hamburg, though. Let's get into some of these tracks.
Yes.
I want to go back to 55 really quickly, because one of the other attractive tracks on that album was Dog a Donut. Attractive to me because it was through that recording of it that I realized that that was a cover of Cat Stevens.
Cat Stevens.
I'd never credited him because the version of Dog a Donut I heard was Jelly Bean Benitez, which was sort of a B-side to Madonna's Sidewalk Talk. And so that was a whole revelation. I was like, well, which Cat Stevens was this? Because none of his other material sounds like that.
Right.
But I loved their cover of that. But I want to get into some of the tracks and ask you about your favorite or what you think is the fire track on this.
Fire tracks. For me, it's a tie between the Mobb Deep cover and the Gangstar cover.
Oof.
So we got All for the Cash.
All for the Cash.
On one hand. Burn. And then
Burn yeah.
on the other. Let's listen to both right now. And then All for the Cash. What is it about these two?
When I first heard the Gangstar cover, I just flipped, man. It was just like unbelievable. I love that they've not only interpreted it, but they've made it their own.
Mm.
There's a really incredible build up in the track and, like, you know, crescendos. And it's an evocative cover. And it's not just, okay, we're going to kind of like repeat, you know, the melody and whatever. We're going to build something, and they did that. And then for the Mobb Deep jam, man, it's just like hearing Mobb Deep interpreted in like a Caribbean way is just like incredible. I was just like, dude, what? Like Burn? Seriously? Like, I love it. Absolutely love it. But the Gangstar is really like robust.
Yes.
And the Mobb Deep is just groovy, man.
I just like that they went with deep cuts.
Yep.
It's not like they went with Shook Ones or Mass Appeal, which would have made more sense, perhaps. But I would have loved to be in the room when Wagner was telling his group, and they're in the composition phase in terms of, all right, which song should we pick? And they're like, nah, it's too obvious. That was too much of a hit. Let's go with some B-sides. You
sure,
know?
Yeah. Sure. Hearing a Caribbean version of Gangstar is a treat.
Yeah.
One that I couldn't have imagined because I'm a Gangstar fan, a Guru fan, and like I can't. What makes Gangstar for me are obviously the beats, not just Guru, but the beats. But to hear it like this, I thought, I'll give it a shot. Not my favorite track on there, but certainly a fire track.
I would love to know what Primo thinks about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, has he heard it and is he into it?
And
yeah.
I think his first question is, wait, did they clear this?
Yeah, that was my first question.
Because, you know, it is All for the Cash. So, yeah. So, Morgan, I know you do have high standards of covers. First of all, what is your fire track? But I also just want you to talk about, does this album pass the Morgan Rhodes threshold for quality cover songs?
It does pass the threshold, and here's why. We've said many times about, not just about this album or other songs, artists' ability to make tracks and things their own. Mm. Sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes it's not. Because there are no vocals on this album, to me, it's perfect because there's nothing that gives you an internal comparison. Jennifer Hudson versus Jennifer Holliday, Otis Redding versus Aretha Franklin, or the many other covers we can get into. You're not awash in like technicalities.
Yeah.
This opens up a palette that exists all by itself with nothing like some other rapper covering this. And you'd be like, that's whack. It is a different interpretation that takes comparison off the table. So to that end, it passes my test. Two, it's so unexpected.
Mm.
You couldn't have told me in a million years that a steel pan band would be covering A. Marie. You couldn't have told me. And so it's a wonderful and nice surprise. And their ability to make things that I thought were sort of corny, like Rocket's theme, be sort of dope.
Again, this goes back to the deep cuts thing. You're not doing Phil Collins in the Air Tonight. You're not even doing like the main Miami Vice theme song. You're doing Jan Hammer's Crockett's theme from the original 80s Miami Vice. Like, what are they smoking out in Hamburg? I mean, how do they even come
something
up with
good.
This?
Something good.
What was your fire track, though?
I Love You.
Yes. If I can add, we're going to test out a new question that we're going to ask every week, which is if people have a favorite, not a favorite song on the album, which of course we always ask at the fire track, is there a favorite moment? And for me, at least on this album, it's I Love You and how it begins. Because when I first saw it on the track listing, I didn't bother to look at the publishing credits. I thought it might have been a soul cover from the 60s or 70s, because there's a lot of songs called I Love You. And the way that the song begins, you don't realize it's the Mary J. joint until about, what, maybe 8 bars in.
This one's fire.
Garth, I don't want to put you on the spot here because we didn't prep you with this ahead of time, but do you have a favorite moment on this album?
That's my same favorite moment.
Yeah.
Because I was also surprised.
Yeah.
I didn't know the publishing. I didn't know it was Mary J.
Right.
Mm-mm. So when I'm, you know, listening to the record and it comes on, first of all, the beat, you know,
the drums
are fire.
Ooh. Yeah.
I'm like, wait, what is this?
Yeah.
And then boom. I'm just like, oh, it's Mary. Like, really? Like, yes, incredible. So I agree with you. That's mine too.
It'd be cool, and I don't know, maybe someone on YouTube or SoundCloud's already done this, but just take the Mary J. a cappella and then just drop it on here, you know, get it quantized, put it in sync. I wonder how that would sound.
Let me make notes. That might be me later on when we get home tonight. I might be playing around with a cappellas.
Of course, we also talk about sleeper jams, and for me at least, half this album is covers, but the other half are actually the Bacow's original compositions, and it's easy to forget about that half because we're geeked to hear Burn.
Sure.
We're geeked to hear, you know, gangster B-sides getting covered. But I actually think the original compositions are strong. And my favorite amongst them is Maracas Bay Boogie, which is just a great tune in and of itself. This song to me has a very, very different feel from the Mary J. cover or from the Dr. Dre cover. And I like kind of the looseness and the playfulness that they're bringing to them just doing their own songs. Garth, you have a sleeper jam on here.
Hula Hoop, I think, would be mine.
Mm.
It's just super groovy. It's so easy to dance to, man.
Mm.
Yeah, I love it.
Funky flutes, man. We don't really hear a lot of funky flutes anymore either.
See, I bet you this conversation is going to inspire someone to go out and grab these drums. You reviewed this album for NPR, correct?
I did. Yeah.
Are your thoughts different now listening to it than when you reviewed it?
No, not at all. And what part of why I wanted to pitch it was because I collect steel drum albums. And so because the Bacow Rhythm and Steel Band is a modern version of groups like the Trinidad Steel Drum Band or the Dutch Rhythm and Steel Band, I knew I had a backstory to provide. And I think these days I'm less interested when I review an album, I'm less interested in stuff that I just think is merely good because there's much more more qualified music critics to do that. If all they're talking about is like what makes an album good or bad. And I'm not saying that's easy to do. I'm just saying it's not as interesting to me. I need to find another angle where I have some kind of entry point to talk about music or a band or an album or whatever that draws from something broader, just to make it interesting for me to talk about. And so, I, you know, if it had just been like a really well-made soul funk album, I don't know if I would have pitched it, but the steel drum thing, like I said, it gave me a point of entry that I could draw upon the history of the tradition. That's what made it compelling to want to pitch to review.
In your opinion, is this a better album than 55?
I'd have to go back to 55 and take a listen to it. But I think I just like the fact that they're going with those kind of deep cuts, that they're further moving away from sort of maybe more obvious covers, even though covering Cat Stevens on 55, that was not an obvious move to make either, right? So it's like they already started at that deep level. So I'd have to go back to do a side-by-side. But I think Garth said it well earlier, is that you get the sense that there's a greater comfort level, a greater sophistication to their approach with this one. Whether it's better or not, I don't know, but I like both. Yeah.
We generally ask our guests, because they're talking about albums, is there a song that they would like to see covered or an artist they'd like to see cover? In this case, in this album, is there a song that you'd like to see them take on for their next album?
Ooh, that's a great question. Love that. Well, Morgan, why don't you start us off? What did you have in mind?
You know, the pressure's on because you've talked about them, you know, doing deep cuts, and none of my picks are deep cuts. They're just cuts that I like. I'd love to see them do Computer Love, Zapp's Computer Love.
Yes.
Why, I'm not sure, but that's what came into my mind first. I'd like to see them do Forget Me Nots, Patrice Rushen. I'd love to hear them cover Prince, Head, because it's probably the only way I can get my mother to listen to it if I have to explain it. I thought about Erica, On and On. I thought about Aaliyah, Rock the Boat. There were just obvious cuts, not deep.
There's only one real answer. Oklahoma. As an homage to the Salt and Pepper Steel Band.
Shout out to Bob Sharp, my stepfather. But yeah, those are some of the things that I thought about. Not deep cuts, Oliver. My apologies for that. But what about you?
It would be nice to hear some West Coast, classic West Coast hip hop.
Yeah.
You know, like some NWA. I think that could be kind of killer.
Bjorn, if you're out there, man, make it happen.
You know.
But you could imagine maybe Drake's In My Feelings. Yeah. Still.
Yeah, you can. So,
totally.
Definitely.
Dee-dee. I can't, of course, I can't do a very good still drum impression. Y'all get the idea.
What about you? Besides that, what else would you like to hear if you had to pick?
It's hard to answer partly because I'm sensitive to the ways in which, as we've been talking about, the ways in which still drum, I don't want it to become a cliche. And so if on their third album, there's always a risk that if you're just doing more hip hop covers or more R&B covers, there's always a risk that you're creating this new kind of cliche to it. And so, you know, the things that I might suggest could include, let's say, like do Mass Appeal, right? Or do, you know, just the hip hop greatest hits of the 1990s. And even though part of me would be delighted by that, I also just don't want them to turn into their own kind of caricature of themselves in that sense. So I don't know. I've entrusted them to pick songs that catch me off guard, and I would say continue to do so. But that said, like, you know, I'm trying to think of like a really cool soul jazz song, for example, that would really lend itself. Something that maybe has really good piano in it, which translates well to steel band. It's always the surprises that are my favorites. You know, for example, one of my favorite steel drum covers is of Cars from the early 80s by this group called the Kotzen Jammers. You just don't expect it. Like, you don't expect to hear a Gary Numan covered steel band cover style. And so to me, I just want Bacow to always keep that element of surprise. Keep me off guard. Don't do something that I would have predicted that you might do.
Yeah, that's a great recipe for success.
Do you think this album was right on time, ahead of its time, or timeless?
Oh, I'd call it timeless. Yeah, because if you played it for, you know, someone older or someone younger that's not familiar with any of the hits on the record, it's just going to sound like a steel drum record. I think it would be interesting to interview, you know, younger people and older people that don't know the hits.
Yeah.
And then follow up with playing the hits. Mm. I mean, almost like a backwards progression. Like, so what do you think of this is the original, you know, and get their opinion. It's interesting. So it's timeless to me.
If you had to describe the Serpent's Mouth in three words, what would you choose?
Funky, dynamic, and rhythmic. Or Caribbean. You know, yeah, funky, dynamic, Caribbean. It's just, I think that's a pretty obvious description. You know, you get when you say Caribbean, you get a sense of what you're going to get. You know, oh, well, that means, what does that mean? Tropical.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
You know, oh, it's steel drums. You know what I mean? Like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That goes with tropical, goes with Caribbean, makes sense. Cool. So funky, dynamic, Caribbean.
That will do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Garth Trinidad. Garth, what are you working on these days?
What am I working on?
That we can expect.
That you can expect. Me to maintain my sanity raising teenagers. That's what I'm working on.
There you go. I feel that. I got a 13-year-old, almost 14, so I feel what you're saying right now.
Yeah, basically. Otherwise, you know, I'm just curating events and working on some potential TV projects, and it's cool. Feeling good. Just trying to stay creative, man.
And where can listeners find out more about you? Where are you on the socials, on the interwebs, etc.?
At Garth Trinidad on the Insta and the Twitter, and that's basically kind of where you find me.
Also want to remind listeners, if you want your tastes to be heightened, if you want to get into great music, check him out every night on KCRW.
Oh, yeah, I do that too.
Yeah. 8 to 10, it is the best 2 hours you will ever give yourself in your ears. He has been great, as I said in the beginning, for 23 years.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes.
Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess, one of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup.
Heat Rocks is produced by myself and Morgan, alongside Christian Duenas, who also edits, engineers, and does the booking for our shows.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and our executive producer is Jesse Thorne.
We are part of the Max Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles, where you can find both rhythm and steel, if you know what I mean. We want to thank all of our 5-star iTunes reviewers. We've had one, so y'all need to step it up. But we do want to thank AthenaGirl1990, who says that she is, I'm assuming it's a she, is a longtime listener, and it's shameful to say that I'm just getting around to writing a review. You know what? There's never a too late time, Athena Girl. We appreciate it. And for you, it's never, ever too late. We would love to have you do it, because it is how new listeners find their way to us. So go to iTunes, leave us a review, and we might read part of it on the air.
All right. We also wanted to thank all of our social media fans and family out there, including the following folks. Lost in Williamsburg. Shout out to Lost in Williamsburg. Also want to thank Shelly Has Opinions. Thank you for your opinion of Heat Rocks Podcast. Want to thank Joni. We also want to thank, as always, Jason P. Woodbury for holding us down. We want to thank Spooky at Spooky. We also want to thank DJ A-Team, and we want to thank DJ Ryan Fresh. Thank you so much. We do so appreciate the tweezies and the retweezies. Good to see you, Oliver.
Good to see you too, Morgan.
One last thing. Here's a teaser for next week's episode featuring Tall Black Guy talking about D'Angelo's Voodoo.
One of the songs, I remember I am taking the lyrics and writing to a girl. But
okay, we gotta hear that. Listen, Tall Black Guy. This Heat Rocks is a safe space for confessions. All right, you got to tell us about that.
It was One More Again.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I ended up taking some of I don't know off the top of my head, but I remember I ended up lifting some of the first verse to write to my then girl I was digging or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know.
How'd that work out for you, brother?
Oh, it was good. It worked.
Okay. All right then. Listen. Success.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.